And we're back. It's Mountain Money on KPCW. Thank you for listening. Our first guest is Craig Hall. He's a billionaire from Dallas who, according to a recent article in the Dallas News, is on a mission to democratize entrepreneurship. Hall is the founder and head of the Hall Group, which owns, develops, and manages commercial real estate, structured financial lending, winemaking, early stage angel investments, and an extensive fine art collection.
Hall worries that America's entrepreneurial spirit is dimming thanks to too much regulation, too little capital, and a trend toward capitalization. But there's a lot of nuance to the issue, and while this is a good time for some entrepreneurs, it's also the worst of time for others. The difference comes down to geography, industry, and demographics, just to name a few.
Hall discusses those factors that Roger just mentioned and many more in his new book, Boom, Bridging the Opportunity Gap to Reignite Startups. Craig Hall, welcome to Mountain Money.
Good morning. Great to be on.
Thank you. Well, we want to start with you and your background, which is actually a great story about realizing the American dream. You didn't graduate from college, is that right?
That's correct. I attended the University of Michigan, but I dropped out because I was growing my business and had trouble. I had to work a full-time job to support my business, which was losing money, and I had too much going on, so I dropped out of college.
And when you were 18 years old, you started your real estate career by buying a boarding house in a college town. Fast forward to today, you're a founder and head of the Hall Group, so you've realized the American dream, but now you're saying that's harder to do.
It is. I think that I was very lucky. A number of years ago, I heard someone talk about the fact that new businesses are actually declining, and in fact, over the last 30 years, we're starting today fewer businesses than we did by almost half. So it's a huge difference. And the United States has, we do great with these billion-dollar tech startups in Silicon Valley or biotech companies, but we really have left a lot of traditional entrepreneurs in a rougher shape than when I started, and I hope we can talk about this as an issue and as a country address it. I think we need more smaller businesses to have more opportunities.
I want to explore a little bit about, you know, why you think this is happening and particularly the disparate impacts it's having among different classes of potential entrepreneurs. But first, let me ask you, what is so important about small business in terms of job creation in this country?
Well, actually, most of the vast proportion of the net new jobs in the country do come from small businesses. Small businesses, when they start, are employing more and more people to grow. And small businesses often innovate and come up with great new ideas. And certainly by having more people own parts of the business community, you have great citizens. And it's really a kind of fundamental to the American dream. So I think they're really important in a lot of ways.
Now, you've identified some public policy issues that you think might be, perhaps unintentionally, causing this problem. What are those?
Well, I think we have inadvertently or otherwise had a big consolidation in so many industries. I've been involved in a lot of different businesses, and it seems like there's constantly mergers and acquisitions, and the bigger getting bigger, and there's just fewer small guys. For instance, in the drugstore business, my wife's family used to own a couple drugstores. Today, independent drugstores are very, very rare. And, yeah, it's mostly CVS or Walgreens or Rite Aid.
We've seen a similar trend happening in the ski resort industry, Craig, where they used to have a lot of locally owned ski resorts, and now it seems like they're becoming more consolidated. So Park City has seen its own complexion change as part of that trend.
It's unfortunate because of capital and because of just our whole regulatory system. The big have an advantage over independent, and again, that's something we as a country should have a thought about and discuss and say, hey, if it's important to have independence, then we should do something to help them.
Let's zoom a little bit on public policy specifically in terms of what is it that you think, or that from a public policy perspective, is contributing to this sort of dominance of the big guy? What are we doing that's causing this?
Well, for instance, in the Great Recession we had in 2008-9, we lowered interest rates and we made money more available, but the lower rates and the money more available was only to creditworthy big guys. The smaller people kind of got squeezed out, and actually in the last 10 years it's been even more difficult to compete. It's great that rates are cheap, but if you can't get the money, it doesn't really help you. So I think there are things we could do to really emphasize capital availability, incentives and government programs that could help level the playing field and put incentives back to investing in startups and smaller companies.
That's really interesting, because I think a lot of the post-recession reaction by large lending institutions was, oh my, we made so many mistakes leading up to the big recession that we are going to require massive amounts of paperwork compliance and creditworthiness. So are you suggesting that there might be more of a role for government through SBA and similar programs that would facilitate lending to smaller businesses?
Exactly. I think, first of all, I agree with you that the regulators and the banks understandably became more cautious and more oriented towards safety, and larger companies are safer to loan to. But there are organizations, as you say, like the Small Business Administration, the SBA, that can counterbalance that if they have more capital and if they're more active. And we could also use our tax policy. We have tax incentives for people to invest in real estate. What about having tax incentives for people to invest in traditional startups, not high-tech companies? We got lots of venture capital for those big guys. But what about giving people a tax benefit for investing in their own community in startups that people they know want to get going?
Craig, I was surprised when your book came across our desk, and I did not realize that there had been this decline in Americans starting their own businesses, because it seems the headlines these days are all about this great startup, a startup here, a startup there. You're hearing about everyone who has their startup, and then they run it for 4 years, and then they sell it to a bigger company, and then they all retire and come to Park City. So when we're talking about reigniting startups, we're not talking about the big tech company. You're talking about that smaller mom and pop shop. And an interesting dichotomy in what you're saying. I had heard recently from the Utah Chamber of Commerce that one of the fastest growing demographics for business owners in Utah was Hispanic women starting their own businesses. And I explored that in a former job, and we realized that they were out there doing their own thing and decided to start their own business as opposed to try to work on getting hired somewhere else. But you're finding that minority-owned businesses and women-owned businesses have a higher hurdle to clear before they get any kind of investment.
They do have a higher hurdle, and at the same time, as you're saying, entrepreneurship in general is more talked about and more popular. Despite all that, the numbers aren't better as people would expect. And I share your surprise at the issue, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to write the book, was to make sure that people really did understand we have kind of a tale of two worlds. On the one hand, people talk about and think about these big entrepreneurial success stories. But on the other hand, a whole lot of people that are trying are having a very difficult time starting a more traditional business. And I certainly wouldn't want to discourage anyone from trying. And there are a lot of nonprofits that are helping people today. So we have a lot of good things going on. But despite all that, we need some major policy changes to really move the needle. And we really should help more people have more opportunities. It'll grow our middle class, and it'll just help our communities.
So one possibility, or one sort of public policy perspective, would be to increase the presence of organizations like the SBA, which is a role for government to play in facilitating access to capital. Let's talk about some other public policy prescriptions that you would think would help.
Well, one of the big problems today is millennials. A lot of people start businesses when they're young, but today so many of our young people have student debt, and they don't own homes. When baby boomers were in the similar ages, we owned homes, and we could get a second mortgage on our house to start a little business. A lot of people I know did that in years past. So I think one of the things we could do is deal with student debt and have student debt be held in abeyance when somebody's starting a business, maybe even discount some of that student debt for people who are entrepreneurs for a period of time and making a difference. We really need to realize that it's much more difficult for young people today who don't have a nest egg to get something started. And a lot of them, frankly, were scared away by what they saw in 2008 and 2009, which was a pretty serious recession. So we need to do policy things that help them get the capital to get started.
You also talk about rural regions, and Summit and Wasatch counties, where we broadcast, are considered rural counties, even though we're quite close to the Salt Lake Valley and a population of 2 million people. I would think rural economies would benefit from these new technologies, where someone could go and live in a little bit of a more removed area and still make a business work thanks to all of this new high tech we have, you know, the internet and Amazon Prime delivering things to you. But you say that rural regions still are seeing a tough time.
They are. In fact, some don't have connectivity and broadband. So in that sense, they aren't really part of the technology world. But even ones that are tend to just be left behind. The success for new startups is mostly an urban environment, and success for a lot of startups really is geographically Silicon Valley, San Francisco, New York, and Boston. Even many urban areas are not nearly what they could and should be, but the rural areas are particularly hard hit.
And those tech-oriented startups tend to be obviously technology-oriented. Do they have the same sort of employment potential for, you know, creating more jobs?
Yes, some do. Certainly it's great that we are as good as we are as a country in technology, and some of the technology companies do employ a lot of people, but you have to have particular skills, and certainly with artificial intelligence and AI changes that are coming, the skill level for a lot of people who will find that their jobs are eliminated by some of the technology, they're going to have to change their skills. And that's another thing that should drive a lot of people to want to just start a business and have more control of your own life.
So again, that takes me to another question, which is from a public policy perspective. What is your perspective on the extent to which creating more technical skills in the workforce will have a symbiotic and positive relationship with entrepreneurial startups? In other words, do we need to have to help people create the skill sets that will allow these businesses to grow?
Well, I think it's great to look at, and we as a country should be looking at new skill sets just in the changing economy. We have such a rapidly changing economy and artificial intelligence being kind of the new frontier of that. In terms of businesses, I think there's just such a wide range of new startups that we can have that it really varies, and it depends on the business as to whether we need training of new skills in any given area. But there are just some very basic businesses that we just really need to help and encourage and make it easier. You know, oddly enough, this is a terrible statistic, but the World Bank rates every country in the world in terms of ease of starting a new business. And I would think the United States should be 1, 2, 3, maybe at least in the top 10. We're number 53.
Oh, wow.
When I finished the book, which was 8-10 months ago, it takes that long to be published, we were 48th. So in the book, I say we're 48th, but the new statistics in 2019 were 53rd.
So why are we getting worse?
Well, I think it's regulation. It's access to capital. They have a whole list of things they use as criteria. Unfortunately, this problem is not being dealt with. And, you know, It's just a terrible situation.
Who are the top 52? No, don't name all 52, but who are the top three?
Number one was New Zealand, and I don't remember the others, but I'll tell you, a bad one is Russia's ahead of us. Belarus is ahead of us. I mean, it's just awful.
You know, the last major public policy move that could affect the development of business was the 2017 tax bill. To what extent did you see in that benefits that could help entrepreneurs or not?
Well, I think there were no real benefits to small startups. There was some benefit to some areas that called opportunity zones, which were intended to provide capital to underserved areas, but not so much to new startups. On the contrary, a lot of the bill was really, frankly, helping people like me who don't need the help. And I'm grateful for any tax benefit, but I don't necessarily think it's the right thing to do. I would have rather have seen it go to help a lot more people that have dreams and don't have the tools to make their dreams happen. And that we as a country are rich enough to provide more opportunities for more people to improve their lives, and that's what we should be doing.
I suppose there are a few small entrepreneurs who benefit from the carried interest provision. Anyway.
Yeah, maybe.
So you are proposing your own solution. You mentioned nonprofits a little bit earlier, and you have the Bridge the Gap Foundation. How does it work?
Well, that's just putting a little bit of money where my mouth is, I guess, and we're supporting financially some nonprofits in different areas, as well as through them, some entrepreneurs who are trying to start businesses, particularly emphasizing women and people of color. And as part of that, we're going to document the stories and put things online and just try to continue to bring this issue to the forefront so people can think about how to help make things better in their own communities. But I think the big solutions really are public policy ones. And the main thing to get that done is really to talk about this as an issue. And that's kind of all of what I hope to help a little bit in.
So I would like to ask a question of Craig Hall about our next guest, Roger. So I'm sure you know where I'm going with that. But before I do, is there anything else you want to ask?
Just out of curiosity, are you seeing any activity on the Hill or any legislative movement towards some of the issues that you've identified at this point?
I think I've gotten great reception. I'm hoping this can be a bipartisan issue. But the congresspeople I've just started to talk to, I find this very interesting and appealing as an issue. And I think, unlike a lot of things, I think there are programs you can do here that will pay for themselves. If you create new businesses, they employ people, they create taxes. So it's not a zero-sum game where you're just giving somebody something. You're helping them create value, which in turn benefits the country.
So we've been talking to Craig Hall. He's a New York Times best-selling author. His latest book is called Boom, Bridging the Opportunity Gap to Reignite Startups. We really have enjoyed this conversation. Now I want to ask you about our next guest. It's Michael Norton. He's an associate professor of business at Harvard Business School. And we're going to talk to him about something he's researched called Can Money Buy Happiness? And I'm curious about your answer to that question.
Well, let me put it this way. That would be a yes and a no. I certainly, having been poor and having been rich, I certainly think that used properly, money can help.
One of the things we didn't get to talk to in this conversation that comes up in the book is the wonderful story of many of your great successes and risks and failures. And I'm sorry we didn't get to talk about those stories today, but we recommend the book because those are really interesting. So thank you.
Thank you, Craig.
Thank you so much.
We appreciate it.
Enjoy talking with both of you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.